We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the 50th episode of In the Know. The Hornets just completed a 1-3 week smacking around Orlando, getting smacked around by Atlanta, and having two pretty decent solid games against San Antonio and Oklahoma City. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Michael, you called it. You said Orlando would be the team we would take down. Did you expect us to have a romp like that, or is that a surprise to you even?
No, after that game that Orlando had with Boston the night before, where they gave up, I think, a 27-point lead, weren't able to hit a shot in the fourth quarter, and Dwight Howard was basically just fuming with some of his teammates. I knew there was no way Orlando would be able to concentrate that night, but man, that game was just... That was embarrassing for every other player on the floor, for Orlando outside of Dwight, but they didn't have Ryan Anderson, who was the guy I was the most afraid of anyway.
Right. Yeah, but did the starters combine for like 16 points or something like that besides Howard?
And
he calls them out after the game. I mean, I'm sorry. Usually I hate it when stars call out the rest of their team, but they deserve it, man. I mean, that team is bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, you were being generous. It was 11 points for the starters on 5 of 23 shooting.
Wow.
Yeah, one of 10 from three-point line, which, I love the Magic. God love them. I mean, they're missing threes, and they don't care. They keep hoisting them. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that game was... was like a bright moment for the Hornets faithful who've kind of stuck it out all year, but I don't know. I don't know what to say if I was a Magic fan, but
I think they're done. They just need to find who's the best person for Howard. And by the way, there's articles out there that they should swap Howard for Blake Griffin. Holy shit! If I was the Clippers, I would never make that offer.
Wow. Really?
Really? Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan? I mean, those are what everybody's saying. Trade those two people for Dwight Howard? No. I mean, that team is already kind of a three-man game. I mean, reducing it even more, I don't see it.
Yeah, but you'd be able to fill people around. I mean, you got Chris Paul and Dwight Howard on the squad in a market like L.A. You'd be able to get anybody else you want there. But I would do that trade. But what interests me more about, you know, as I'm watching the Orlando game, I'm seeing tweets and hearing people say that, you know, going through all of the trade scenarios of what Orlando could get for Dwight Howard. And the one that came up was Amari Stoudemire and Tyson Chandler, in essence, with him going to New York. And immediately that just struck me. And I hear this cliche all the time where people say that front offices aren't loyal to players, so why should players be loyal to front offices? And it really rings true. And I'm never going to get upset again if a player wants out of a city for a better situation, because I think of somebody like Tyson Chandler, who could have got a little bit more money from Golden State, but he wanted to play in New York. He wanted to play with that team specifically, bring them the defense that they've needed. And now they have a chance at a bigger and better thing, and they would just ship him out tomorrow if he could. And, you know, fans get so mad when players aren't loyal to the team, but over and over again, we see that, you know, the team really has no loyalty to the players either. So I don't understand why that doesn't go both ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty rare thing that teams show much loyalty. I mean, people are still talking about Steve Nash and how he's showing loyalty and stuff. I mean, that actually goes both ways. The Suns could have traded him a while ago.
Right.
But he doesn't want to go, and so they're not trading him. I don't think they have any realistic expectation of going anywhere.
No, but they do have an expectation of selling tickets. And
yeah.
Nash gone, even if you could bring in, what, a decent seventh man in return for him. But I just see how angry that fans get with players. And honestly, Knicks fans would ship Tyson Chandler out in a second to get Dwight Howard. And I don't know. It just was something that came into my head watching that Orlando game, where honestly, you have to distract yourselves at times in Hornets games. But I mean, kind of going back, the week didn't start off that bad. That game at home against San Antonio, which you predicted could be a Hornets win and was close enough. Where did this Tim Duncan come from?
Yeah, well, I mean, the announcers kept just railing on the fact. At least I had the away announcers, which usually annoy me in San Antonio games because Sean Elliott is one of the worst homers in the business. But they just kept pointing out the fact that, you know, Popovich sat him for a game. He let him get a little bit of rest, and Duncan came back and played like he had some energy. I mean, he hasn't had much punch all season long. So it was pretty unusual to see 28 points out of Tim Duncan. Honestly, I actually kind of enjoyed watching him play because, you know, you're not going to see very much of him anymore. I'd be surprised if he goes past, you know, another year in the league. But that was a fun game. And you kind of wish they pull it out in the end. On the other hand, I was not upset when they didn't because, of course, you know, we want to have as many losses as possible.
How dare you think about the draft?
Yeah, as soon as he hit that shot, I was like, it's okay.
Yeah, the losses aren't nearly as bad. How about that San Antonio team? I mean, Ginobili comes back, could get to 100%. Is that team a contender in the Western Conference to you with the big three and then also some of the other young pieces that they're kind of getting together there?
Well, I mean, I said I thought they would hit the Western Conference Finals this year. When Ginobili's playing with them, they are a different team. The big worry of them, of course, now is San Antonio is a pretty poor defensive squad. Their offense is what's carrying them, and they have to have Ginobili for that to operate at a high clip. I don't know. I still think that they could easily be the dark horse who would sneak into the Western Conference Finals. One last hurrah if Ginobili comes back and he's fully healthy.
Yeah, and speaking of Western Conference contenders, the next game was Hornets going to Oklahoma City, which, you know, I'll be quite honest. I was pretty impressed with the way the Hornets played, particularly for most of the first half. I mean, even most of the three quarters. Durant got hot in spurts, but I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of fight, especially from our boy Gustavo in that game.
Yeah, Ione is. I mean, there's no. I mean, he's the fan favorite. If you look at the poll on our site, there are more people who have him as their favorite player than any other player on the team. I mean, and then again tonight against Atlanta, even though they got drilled, we had a comeback, and that comeback was Gustavo fueled. I mean, the guy is just smart. I mean, he's one of he is probably the most intelligent big man I've seen on this team when it comes to just like basketball IQ, and that's including David West. I mean, he makes the right passes. He cuts at the right time. He does his defense on the pick and roll is great. And I mean, he can actually go out and guard some of those bigger guards and not be embarrassed when they're trying to take him off the dribble. He's a pretty talented player.
Yeah, I mean, in a game tonight where the Hornets lost by 22, Gustavo was a plus 7, played 25 minutes, had 0 turnovers, just does everything right. So what do you see as the potential? I mean, are we talking about a definite starter, a fringe starter? I mean, more or less an energy bench guy? What's Gustavo's ceiling on, let's say, a playoff team?
So, I mean, I'm not comfortable saying he is a definite starter. I mean, I could see him doing something like easily pulling a career out like Luis Scola or something like that. But because he's just like, he's always got his motor running. He has to show me a little bit more offensive. I don't think he has the size to be a center. Let me just put it that way. I don't think he's quite big enough to be a full-time center in the league, which means he's got to be able to play power forward, and he's got to be able to hit like that mid-range shot, because you see it every once in a while where he catches the ball there and he doesn't really have that shot. And the thing is, though, is if you go and look at his numbers overseas, he could hit the mid-range shot periodically. So, I mean, if he can show that he can do that in the NBA today, I think Gustavo Ayon is going to be an incredibly good power forward. I just don't know if I can see him as a center.
Right. Yeah, and that's what's going to be interesting is because of this year and how few practices the Hornets have, it's really going to be hard to see huge leaps in development with these guys. But
this is a story I keep meaning to bring this up. It was like the second game he played. It was at the very end of a quarter, and they were doing the spread floor thing with the point guard up at the up at the top of the 3-point line, waiting for the time to tick down to 10, and they were going to go. And he's standing in the paint. No one's around him, because in the international game, there's no rule against standing in the paint. You can do that all you want to. So he's just standing there, and Squeaky shouts something at him. And he looks over his shoulder and just turns around and stands there. So Squeaky walks across the court and pushes him physically out of the paint. And, I mean, it was one of the funniest things I've watched in a long time. And then he nods his head. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember now. And tonight, against Atlanta, he was in the paint and had the same thing going there. And all of a sudden, he just remembered. He saw a click. And he, like, suddenly sprang out of the paint and bounced there a few times. Like, yeah, I got it right. So he's clearly learning the game. I mean, you got to remember that. He is a rookie. He doesn't play like a rookie, but he's got to learn the game.
Right.
So he could turn into something pretty amazing as long as he could show a little bit more offensive skill.
I agree. And, I mean, another thing I love about Ayon, is he the only Hornets big man that doesn't pick up 3 offensive fouls on moving screens a game? I mean, it seems like a curse. I watch plenty of NBA, and I don't see teams have this affliction the way that the Hornets do, where they get called for 2 or 3 moving screens a game, and it's always the bigs. It's usually Okafor, and he just has that look on his face like he doesn't understand, even though he's called for it twice a game. And I have that problem. I love it.
I think you're exaggerating a little bit. You can see it around the league.
Not as much as though. Okay, I want that stat. I'm sick of
PR. Offensive foul?
Yeah, specific. I don't need PER or win shares or all these advanced stats. Just come up with some kind of stupid or unnecessary, or like in tennis, they have unforced errors. That's what I want in basketball. That should be an unforced error on Emeka every single time he sets a moving pick or, you know, gets called for an offensive foul because he sticks his arm out.
But
whatever.
Is the Emeka or is the guard going to?
I'm so sick of that. They try to bail Emeka out by saying, well, the guard has to wait until he sets up. It's not, no. It's Emeka 98% of the time on that play. And he's even inflicted Jason Smith with the plague a couple times this year. But, all right. So, I mean, I guess we could discuss more on the court, but it would kind of be depressing. Maybe come back to it a little later. But I think the two biggest things for the Hornets this week came off the court. The first was the Eric Gordon extension or lack thereof. Essentially, the Hornets had reached out, offered something around the 4 years, $50 million area, and Gordon, his representatives, wanted something a little closer to what a team would be able to max him out with in free agency, around 4 years, 58. What were your, what are your overall thoughts about the Hornets not being able to lock Gordon up, but some of the comments that came out of the negotiation process from both sides, and where do you see it moving forward?
Well, I mean, I'm not at all upset that they didn't sign Gordon. I mean, this is a negotiation process, and the team currently holds all the cards. The only reason a player should ever be signing one of these contracts is A, the team's an idiot and they're bidding against themselves and offering way too much, or B, they feel like they need to get some sort of long-term security.
Mm-hmm.
And there are players who do that. Like, I mean, the best case ever was, you know, Scottie Pippen back with the Bulls. I mean, he signed a 7-year contract that only paid him $1 million a year. So when his buddy Michael Jordan signed that $30 million contract, he was coming off of a nothing contract.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are players who want that security, and I don't blame, I mean, if you can get a decent amount. But really, I mean, the Hornets did exactly what they should have. They offered him a contract that they want. They didn't offer him the contract that he can get in restricted free agency. I mean, because essentially, if you're approaching max contract, that's exactly what he can get in free agency, because the Hornets can offer more money. So, I mean, when restricted free agency hits, if a team offers him maximum contract, well, then you make that decision then. You don't make it now.
And how about, I mean, his injury situation? So we're hearing that no structural damage, a bone bruise. I mean, are you buying that? Are you buying a bone bruise keeps the guy out for what will essentially at that point be about 6 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so let me ask, do you think it's a real injury, or do you think they're just keeping him out?
I mean, I see Kobe Bryant playing with a torn ligament in his hand every night, and maybe I just don't understand some of it technically, I mean, or have never had it myself, but when there's a shooting guard playing with a torn ligament in his hand night in and night out, and then there's another one who's out for 6 weeks with a bone bruise on his knee, like I said, I'm not a doctor, but that just seems a little odd to me.
Well, I mean, there are some parallels here. I mentioned it in the post they put up about when the bruise was announced that he'd be out another, you know, 3 to 6 weeks. David West, second year in the league, the year that they blew up the Hornets, and it resulted in the 18-win season. He missed 50 games that season with a bone bruise. So one of two things is happening here. Either A, bone bruises can be some serious shit, or B, when the Hornets want to keep a player out and just use an excuse, bone bruise is a pretty good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my only thing is if it was something more serious, I think Eric Gordon signs that $50 million deal. Mm. You know, at that point, you wouldn't risk $50 million just to get seven or eight more down the line. So,
right.
You know, Gordon not signing a deal that would have set him, you know, financially for generations makes me believe that he knows that it's not something long-term, probably expecting right after the All-Star break, that's right around the time frame, and by then this Hornets team could be in that 6-30 type territory where you know, even a return of Gordon
ain't gonna matter.
Yeah. But yeah, so we had the Gordon situation. I guess before we jump on to the next one, you boldly predicted before the season started that Gordon would be injured off and on, but this year he would sign his tender in the summer and then he would leave the following summer. Mm-hmm. Change those thoughts at all?
No.
Hmm.
I mean, so let me just put it this way. Unless something amazing happens over the summer, I don't think I'm going to change my tune about that. I mean, so here's the thing. I really don't the fears people keep throwing out there are that, you know, the Pacers are going to swoop in with a maximum contract and the Hornets are going to be like, oh, I can't pay that much for him. So just stop and pause for a second. Think about this. You are the Pacers GM. You've built this team on reasonable contracts. Paul George and Roy Hibbert and eventually Darren Collison are all going to need big increases in pay. And only David West is coming off. And Granger, though people seem to like to want to deride Granger, he's a pretty important piece of that team. Where are they going to dig up a maximum contract to throw at Eric Gordon without putting all the rest of those guys at risk? And are they going to do that after he's missed, what, 6 weeks, 9 weeks with a bone bruise? If you're Larry Bird, are you making that offer?
I don't know, but I mean, you would think that some team would. I mean, this is a lot of speculation on Gordon coming back and being healthy, but I guess first of all, do you think if some team does do that and Gordon signs, do you think the Hornets would match pretty much? The most another team could give would be right around 4 years and 58. Do you think if some team, whether it's the Pacers, whoever, puts that offer sheet out there and Gordon signs, that the Hornets would match?
I think so.
So your bet is essentially that no team's going to do that. One, the Hornets aren't going to up their offer. Two, and three, Gordon's just going to risk it and play it out at the 5.1 and essentially not let the Hornets match or exceed any offer the following summer.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see that. I do think he wants a long-term contract, and I think if Gordon was angling for 4 years, 56, 4 years, 58 now, I think Demps might give him that exact same contract this summer, but do it after the Hornets got some of their other financial books in order, a lot like the Clippers did with DeAndre Jordan, where they made some moves that brought them near the cap and then were able to give DeAndre that contract to go above the cap. I don't see any point for the Hornets to do this deal this past week unless they could save $2-3 million a year. Gordon wasn't going for that, but I think that sometime this summer the Hornets will ink Gordon to a deal a lot closer to what Gordon was actually asking these past couple weeks, but really no reason to do it now.
Okay.
All right. So we had Gordon with the, I always love when no news becomes news. A team has to release a statement that they didn't do something.
Right.
But Demps actually released a statement that he is in the process of doing something, and that's looking to trade Chris Kamen, who for all intents and purposes have essentially deactivated and have, you know, Kamen not dressing up for games as they look to trade him. What's been your thought on this whole situation?
Love it. I mean, I think I've made myself clear that I'm not. I wanted Kamen gone first before anybody. In fact, in the rotation that I gave, Kamen was out of it. So clearly they're listening to this podcast and they're like, you know, Ryan knows what he's doing over there. So no, I mean, this is exactly what they have to do. So Monty tried to win. He was trying to win. That's why he was playing Kamen. That's why he was playing Landry long minutes. That's why it was our veterans who were getting most of the time. He was trying to win. And when you're 3-15, you just, at that point, you're done. There's no reason to keep trying anymore to just win at the expense of young players. And this is exactly what you'd want your team to do. I mean, you try to make your moves, try to see if you can make some noise. And if you can't make your noise, throw in the towel on the older veterans, move them out, get them off the table, and just get your young players and see what you have. So as far as I'm concerned, this is exactly what we wanted. And I was a little worried, honestly, that Monty wouldn't be willing to do this sort of thing. I thought that Monty would be too eager to win to be able to do this kind of thing and just throw out players who, like Aminu, who, you know, for every good play, they have a play and a half that's terrible. This is perfect. I mean,
yeah, and I think the news of Gordon missing another 3 to 6 weeks, I think they could have possibly been delusioned even at 3-15, especially when all of these losses have been by such narrow margins that, okay, mm-hmm. Eric Gordon's coming back. Maybe we could play, you know, decent ball, get close to 500. I think the record coupled with, you know, the Eric Gordon going to miss a couple more weeks really helped. But I just love the idea of basically pulling Kamen off the team. I mean, this is a guy with injury problems in the past, and I'm surprised teams don't do this more often. I mean, most fans were kind of saying, okay, I understand we're looking to trade Kamen, but why not play him in the meantime? And there's just really, really no upside to that for the Hornets. And I love the idea of just kind of pulling him, you know, off the court and making sure that he's going to be healthy and you get at least an asset or two in return. And, you know, if right. Chris doesn't like it, oh, well, but, you know.
Well, here's the thing. People kept saying, you know, maybe they should play Kamen to showcase him. Well, A, I don't want people seeing how Kamen plays. But B, I mean, no one is going to trade for Kamen based on a couple games that he plays for the Hornets.
Right.
I mean, that's not why you trade for Kamen. You trade for Kamen for a body of work. I mean, the only time it ever makes sense, the idea of showcasing somebody, was when maybe they were injured and they're dogging it. I mean, a perfect example was Baron Davis back when he got traded to Golden State Warriors. They activated him for one game and let him play to prove to the Golden State Warriors that they could watch him for a game and see, oh, yeah, his back's not bothering him. He's just full of shit. And so we'll happily trade for him.
Right.
Which I don't know why that would make you want to trade for a guy.
Yeah. He's not hurt. He just has a horrible attitude.
Right. So please take him off our hands.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's Speedy Claxton.
Right. So, I mean, the idea of showcasing Kamen, I mean, really, you're going to get the same deal for Kamen whether you're playing him or you're not playing him, so you're exactly right. Make sure he doesn't hurt himself. Just let him go sit somewhere. Don't even worry about him anymore. Don't waste the coaching, you know, staff on him anymore. Just get him out the door as soon as you can for something that's reasonable.
I mean, do you think Demps has any kind of obligation to look to move him sooner, or can he basically hold him out right up until the March 15th deadline and just wait on the best deal? I mean, how do you see it playing out?
I mean, I think he has a little obligation to move him as quick as he can. I don't think, but I mean, it's not going to bind him. I mean, if he calls up all of the teams that, you know, express some interest that made him comfortable to make this decision in the first place, and they're, you know, they're offering a second round pick and a bag of Doritos, well, I mean, I would wait a little while longer and see which teams get a little bit more desperate.
Right. Yeah.
So which leads us to the next thing. What do you think we're getting for Kamen? I mean, there are some pretty crazy-ass ideas floating around out there about, you know, what we're pulling back for Kamen.
No, even I was surprised. Like, I obviously always expect fans to want to shoot for the moon, but I saw Chris Sheridan come up with some examples of trades that he was thinking of today. And, you know, the early word was that Demps was asking for salary cap relief, picks and players. I think that would be a place to start. But the teams I really love as trade partners are the Houston Rockets and the Boston Celtics. I think there's a lot of teams out there, but I think both of those teams have multiple first-round picks. The Celtics don't really have the players per se, but that doesn't bother me as much because, honestly, the Hornets have enough young guys they're trying to develop. But to me, the dream trade is the Rockets, and that trade would include either Patrick Patterson or a guy that I know Monty loves, and of course I'm going to mess up the name, but Dontaynius Muntajunas, mm-hmm. who is a guy that that Monty spent a little time scouting. I know likes the guy. He's over in Europe right now, so it's not a guy that would come. I believe he's in Italy. He's not a guy that would come over immediately and would be another young guy to pile on Monty and say, here's another guy you got to play some. He's a guy that could stay over for a year or two and then come and be on a rookie contract. Was a guy that people were talking about as a top 5 or top 10 pick a couple months before the draft, has a lot of upside. So either him or Patrick Patterson, combined with some expiring contracts like Hasheem Thabeet or, Johnny Flynn, whatever, to make the numbers work. But that, the Rockets, plus, like I said, the Rockets have their own pick and the Knicks pick. So, I mean, if they could pull something, some combination of, two of those assets, say Muntajunas and the worst pick out of the Rockets pick and the Knicks pick, something like that, to me, that would be the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is maybe to the Celtics for Jermaine O'Neal and, the better of whatever the first round picks between Boston and the Clippers.
So do you think that's reasonable that we'll be able to get two sources for Kamen?
Two
assets for him?
I think the Rockets really, I think the Rockets would be more desperate than the Celtics. I think the Celtics kind of pride themselves more on toughness. They had, they brought Troy Murphy in last year. It was kind of the power forward version of Chris Kamen in a lot of ways, and he didn't work out. I think the Rockets, if they really feel like they can make the playoffs, I don't know. I think they're probably in love with Muntajunas as much as Demps is, so I think Patterson's more of a possibility. But yeah, Patterson and, the worst of the two picks, Rockets and Knicks, I would take that and add that, essentially look at that as adding it to the bundle that we got for CP3.
Okay, so... I mean, I would be perfectly fine if we just got back one asset for Kamen. I mean, expiring plus either the pick or Muntajunas. Mm. There are two other teams that I wanted to throw out there as possible landing spots for Kamen.
Okay.
See what you think. One is the Milwaukee Bucks. Because, of course, their center, Bogut, went down for another, what, is it 2 months, is it now?
At least.
Dude has the worst luck
in
the world.
He's probably gone for the season, but yeah, at least 2 to 3 months.
So the real question there is, do they seriously believe that they can make a run at those eighth spot in the East? And, I mean, I don't think it's a crazy idea that they could do it. And there are a few younger pieces. I mean, you could ask them for their draft pick. You could go after someone like Jean Lueur, who's their rookie, who's been playing extremely well. And you could easily pick up a couple of their veterans to make that salary work. Another one, and this is always fun because they always seem to need one of our players, Minnesota. Would you trade Kamen to Minnesota for any reason?
You know, I just watched them tonight play the Lakers, and down the stretch they had Anthony Randolph covering Andrew Bynum, which was absolute. I mean, it was embarrassing. The Lakers were playing high low, and Gasol would just feed the ball into Bynum, and it honestly looked like Shaq in his early days backing me down in the post. I mean, he moved. So yeah, the Timberwolves need some size. I think Kamen would be a decent fit on that team, but no, I can't really see a trade that would work, that would really work for the Hornets. And same with the Milwaukee deal. I mean, I think the Hornets are going to want an asset and an expiring contract, and Milwaukee don't have expiring contracts. I mean, they have just bad semi-long-term contract after semi-long contract. I mean,
no, I thought Beno Udra was on his finals year.
No, he has a player option next year.
Oh, does he?
$7.8 million, which he'll definitely exercise.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. For some reason, I thought he was on his last year.
So that'll be tough, and that'll be the tough things with, I mean, there's just not a lot of, you know, big expiring contracts out there. So in a lot of situations, it'll be something where a third team will have to come in possibly, or something else will have to make it work. But I don't know. I mean, it's tough to gauge if Kamen has more value now when there's really nobody else on the, you know, on the trade market. A lot of teams are still exploring who they are, seeing if they're a playoff team or not. Or will Kamen have more value as the trade deadline gets close and teams are really pressed to make a move to give their team a shot of new life? But yeah.
One last idea here, though, and you tell me what you think. Okay. So you said multiple times that you don't, I mean, it's not next year that matters. It's the year after that matters, right? So if you could trade Kamen to a team that, you know, like, that has someone like Beno Udrih who has another year on his contract, it's not good for you. But say they offer you Larry Sanders and their pick or something similar to that, that's pretty enticing. Plus you take Beno Udrih. Would you do that? Would you trade an expiring contract from this year for a nice enough package? Or is like salary cap the end all be all of your existence right now?
No, that's exactly what my plan would be. If essentially what we're saying is, okay, I could take back another expiring contract and get a C-plus asset, or I could take back a contract that has 2 years on it, including this one, and get, you know, two B-minus assets or a B-plus asset, I would definitely do that. I mean, you look at Milwaukee Bucks, for example, and Steven Jackson. I'm sure they would love to just get rid of that guy. He's got 2 years on his contract. So, yeah, give me Steven Jackson and give me, you know, Larry Sanders and your first-round pick. I'll let it be top eight protected. I would take that in a second. That would be my plan if I was looking around and I was Dell, because yeah, I mean, there's really no point in having salary cap room next year. You could essentially bloat up that cap a little bit and then, you know, go over it, like I said, with the Eric Gordon deal if necessary. So I would be looking to mortgage out next year's cap space to get better assets. And if I do that now as opposed to next summer, you know, what's the difference? So that's definitely something I would love to see Dell explore.
Okay. Maybe like next week we'll do a trade extravaganza.
Yeah, if it's not already done by then. But
yeah.
Interesting enough, last week on the podcast, I asked you, give me the scenario in which Chris Kamen is with this team long term. A couple days later, Dell basically puts out a statement that they're looking to trade him. I will ask you the same question with another guy who's kind of been up and down this year.
You're just hoping to get rid of him, aren't you?
As far as getting minutes, give me the scenario in which Carl Landry, who played very well at times this week, is a Hornet long term.
The only way Carl Landry is a Hornet long term, if they cannot draft one of the many power forwards in this upcoming draft, and they have to put Ione into a trade to get somebody else.
So really not much of a possibility.
No, I don't see it. He's 29. Or is he 27? Whichever. He's entirely based on his explosive ability around the basket, and that's going to fall off faster than anything else. He's too small. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't play defense incredibly well. He's very good at scoring right around the basket and getting fouled. And, I mean, I really think that he's the kind of guy who would be valuable to a contender off the bench, but he's not valuable to the Hornets long-term at all.
Okay, so based on that, your gut feeling on Carl Landry getting traded before March 15th?
He'll be definitely shopped. I don't see a trade for him.
No. Because he declines it, or just because the Hornets won't get anything back of value to make it worth it?
I don't think that any of the contenders are going to really offer up anything amazing to get Carl Landry. I mean, do you see them doing that? He doesn't have a complete enough game to be considered a game changer, you know?
I still think a team like Oklahoma City on a one-year rental, I mean, that's still a team that they're a contender, but they struggle for low post scoring.
Yeah, but they're so smart. I mean, so that's one of the things is, hey, you got to have a little bit of desperation there, but I don't see Presti and OKC ever being ready to, like, pull a panic trigger.
But I mean,
not this early.
So the 28th pick in the draft, you know, in this upcoming draft, I mean, Oklahoma City is going to have a pick somewhere around there. You think giving up the 28th pick in a draft is...
Well, here's where Oklahoma City's skill comes back to bite them in the ass. They don't have any bad contracts to throw in there. I mean, they don't have the room to just take on Carl Landry. So who are they going to give us?
Yeah,
Nazi Muhammad, I guess you could get your star set backup center.
No, it would probably just be a situation where they get, you know, a third team to throw an expiring contract. I mean, I'm just saying they can make it work in some ways if they have to. But, I mean, that was just one team. A team like Portland. I know Portland was very interested in him early on. They have a low post scorer in Aldridge, but they don't really have any other ways to get easy buckets. You know, I just think that there's teams out there that would give up a first round pick in the 20s, in the late 20s, for somebody like that, you know, a pick that they're not going to see much value in anyway. And yeah, pick number 28 isn't a great asset, but it's something that, you know, we've seen Dems turn marginal assets into slightly better than marginal assets. And
yeah, I might have overstated the case. Well, he would have some value with a contender, I guess that's said to begin with. I think his salary might be too high. His one-year salary might make it difficult to get a team to be able, because like you said, people are clearing the bad contracts. Mm. I mean, a lot of them, I mean, they're gathered on like a few teams, and those teams aren't contending. So, I mean, really, it's going to be kind of hard to find a team who can send us back something that'll match close enough. I don't know. We'll see. We also have to remember that this team does have to hit the minimum salary mark as well.
Right.
So if we trade away Kamen and we trade away Landry and we trade anybody else, we better get back a serious chunk of salary.
Right. You just get salary. You just get, you know, worse players on expiring deals. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it could be tough, but one thing we know is that Dell will definitely be working the phones. All right, so.
So now that you've jinxed Landry to get him out, because I know that's what you're trying to do there.
Never.
Why are you saying that Landry is one of your favorite players?
I agree with you. I don't think Gustavo could really play a lot of minutes at center. I think Jason Smith is obviously a power forward. And I know Monty is even, he's starting to experiment with Aminu at getting minutes at power forward to see if he fits there a little better. I just really don't think that there's any minutes for Landry. I would love those three guys to get all 48 minutes at power forward for the rest of the year. Nothing against Landry, but, I'd see all three of those guys as guys who are more long-term options with this team, and I would love to see them, get the minutes now to see what they could do there. So
let's go to a segue, because I believe that you wanted to challenge me to a bold prediction.
A bold prediction off?
I was trying to come up with something like that, but that sounds stupid.
Whatever, I'll say it then.
All right. The bold prediction off. How's that sound?
Sounds like a Russian dictator. Go ahead.
All right. So you're talking about players who can play the power forward position.
Yes.
And our good buddy Al-Farouq Aminu. I've now seen him play a significant amount of time. So here is my first bold prediction. Al-Farouq Aminu will never be a consistent starter in the NBA.
Okay, so before I challenge this, define what you consider consistent start. I mean, give me a player. So Carl Landry, I think we could agree, hasn't been a consistent starter in the NBA, right?
Yes.
But he's a solid player.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying probably even worse NBA career than that.
I would say that he would be the kind of player who a team expects to play 10 to 15 minutes at a position as like the seventh or eighth man off the bench.
Will he have a better career than Darius Miles, who a lot of people are talking about Julian Wright?
Oh, no. But Darius Miles actually had a decent career. He was starters for a couple of years.
Okay, so you're saying, well, to me,
he's worse than Darius Miles.
Wow. Okay.
I'll lay out my reasoning, and you can attack it.
Google image Darius Miles, and the first photo you see. Well, okay, but go ahead. He will what?
His offensive game isn't raw, it's rudimentary. I mean, the guy has no ability to dribble. He has no ability to take any sort of shot on the move. He has no touch around the basket at all. I mean, Ariza makes his offense look good. I mean, backwards. He makes Ariza's offense look good. And it's not just the fact that he doesn't have the skills. He knows he has the skills, and he has no ability to make an aggressive decision. And it's really murdering the Hornets at times. They move the ball around the perimeter, and he'll be at the terminus of that pass. So where you're either supposed to take the shot because you're open or make a move. And he catches the ball and looks around and kind of hopes somebody else might have floated magically to an open spot, so he can throw the ball to them and get it turned over, so that he won't have to make a move. Or he'll do a one dribble, the guy will jump in front of him because he's telegraphed it 18 different ways, and he'll stop, pick up the ball, and either turn it over or throw it out to a guard and have wasted the entire offensive possession, essentially, at that point. There's just such a fundamental lack of skill and aggression there. I don't see him overcoming that easily at all or at all.
All right. Well, I guess if I had to bet, I would bet more on the side of Aminu not becoming a consistent starter in the NBA. But some of the things that I do find positive are, one, and I hate being the person who does this because I hate playing the age card. I think people use it too much, but in this case, he did just turn 21 4 months ago. I mean, he's younger than a lot of guys that will be prospects in this year's upcoming draft. Still a really, really young guy who's, what, about 4 years away from hitting what is usually considered an NBA peak, beginning of your prime. So, Okay, a little young. Also, what I never saw in Julian Wright and even other guys, even the all-star that you call Darius Miles, who, according to you, had quite a illustrious NBA career, is how Farouk actually does have a couple of elite parts of his game. His rebounding for the small forward position, rebounds per minute would actually, you know, be towards the top of the league for small forwards. And his free throw percentage. I mean, you watch him at the free throw line. He has it's not just that he makes them. He has an absolutely beautiful stroke. He's 80% in the career, but 92% this year. And to me, I've never seen a guy who has that good of a stroke at the line that it never translated over into the regular part of the game. I think the game is just way too fast for him right now. I think he basically just played off of instinct in high school and college, where he was better than everybody else on the court. So he really, was just going 100 miles an hour, not really thinking through the game. I think he had what we're starting to see, and what a lot of people have known for a long time, one of the worst coaches in the NBA last year in Vinny Del Negro. And now he's just starting to work with Monty, hasn't had a training camp or an off season really yet with the Hornets. I think if at the end of next year this guy has shown no progress, we can make a statement. I don't know how, when you factor all those things in, you can make such a definitive statement right now. You giving up that easy?
I'm still standing by my my statement. I really do think that, I mean, just based on what I've seen, I mean, even like crappy players, players who have no offensive skills, the ones who generally develop them and turn into something are at least the ones who have like the soul of aggression going on there. I mean, you talk about his rebounding. The dude would have an ordinary rebounding rate if he didn't miss every frickin' layup he put up there and then grab the rebound.
Oh, come on.
Okay, that was a little harsh. He's better than that at rebounding, but
I wish we could go back and watch some early tapes of because Gerald Wallace came into the league young.
He did.
It's pretty awful, and you know he rebounded well, and he was kind of spastic on the offensive end. I think Hornets fans are scarred by Julian Wright, and people feel like they want to make that comparison. But I don't really see it, and I guess every time he gets to the free throw line, which really is only once a game,
you get all steamy.
I'm just like, wow, look at that beautiful stroke, and I just believe that he could make something of his own.
All right, I want to get away from you admiring his stroke. So you make your next bold prediction,
right,
so I can lambast you.
That's fine. I guess I'll stay on Hornets. Current players on the rosters, my bold prediction is that Marco Bellinelli will not be playing in the NBA next season. Hornets will not want anything to do with him. He'll look around. He'll have too much pride to take a minimum contract, which if NBA teams have watched him this season would be all that they would offer him, and he will instead decide to play in Europe next year. We are starting a shooting guard who will not be in the league next year.
Yeah, I can't disagree.
And you wonder why we are 4-16.
I think that is definitely a bold prediction that I can't disagree with one bit. I'm completely blown away by your genius.
I don't know. It's a little bit frustrating because the guy did at least show. I mean, from what I saw last year, I didn't think he was worthy of starting, but I thought Bellinelli was on the track to be, you know, a decent backup guard in this league that could do some nice things, but this year has just been an absolute train wreck.
Yeah. I kind of was done with Bellinelli last year. but at least he could hit the three last year. I mean, people keep talking about like he's a terrible shooter. He shot 42% from the floor last year.
Right.
So from three last year.
Right.
But holy crap, he is so bad this year. It's kind of silly.
And other teams were interested. I mean, the Bulls were legitimately interested teams that, you know, needed to spread the floor a little bit. But you take that one thing he did above average out of his arsenal, and really there's absolutely nothing else that that he gives you from game to game. So
what about his you were kind of, you know, intrigued by his playmaking abilities, because when he was coming off the bench with that second unit last year, you kind of liked what he gave him.
Yeah,
you don't see that anymore at all either.
I think maybe a lot of it's there. I think something about playing, I think his confidence is gone. I think that and that's part of it. I think he's going to want to get into a more open style play, more freelance style of play. I think, you know, maybe there's a team in the NBA that he could do that with. I actually think the Jazz wouldn't be a bad fit if you watch the way that they're playing this year. But yeah, I can't imagine a team giving him an offer anything more than, I mean, Aaron Gray had a nice game in the postseason, and he essentially got a minimum offer this summer. I can't imagine anybody offering him anything more than the minimum, and I think pride and the fact that he could get more money out in Europe just forces him out there. So yeah, every game as the Hornets starting lineup is announced, essentially we're watching a guy who won't be in the NBA next year, not because he's too old, he's only 25, but just because he's frankly not talented enough.
All right.
Okay. Well, that's my bold prediction number one. On to you. Back to you, sir.
Bold prediction number two. And for those of you listening, we're doing three each. Bold prediction number two, Trevor Ariza will retire a Hornet.
What? Do you have some injury news that you'd like to break right now?
No. I really honestly believe that Trevor Ariza will not be traded by the Hornets when his contract is up, that they'll work out a deal with him to keep him around even longer. And I believe that Trevor Ariza will remain a Hornet for the rest of his career.
So, okay, but I'm feeling that part of what you have here is this built-in assumption that Demps and Monty will be with the Hornets, you know, for the foreseeable future. Do you think, I mean, it seems like a lot of time when owners come in that they kind of, they clear house or bring in their own people. Are you just assuming that Demps and Monty are going to be here and that's why Ariza is going to stay?
No, I think the reason why I think Ariza is going to stay is I think he is Willie Green with more a defensive ability. He is the kind of player, the kind of guy. He is a coach's player. Coaches love him. I mean, this isn't the first place he's been to that, you know, the coaches just, you know, want to play him long minutes. Even when he was in Houston, I mean, he was playing incredibly long minutes despite his offense because he works so hard. I mean, I have a real problem with Ariza and his offense. But the dude never gives up in any game, no matter what the situation is. And I think, even if he doesn't necessarily remain as a starter for the Hornets, I could easily see the Hornets turning him into their Bruce Bowen.
Yeah, and I guess this kind of goes hand-in-hand with your first bold prediction, because if Al Farouk actually did develop, that would make it easier for...
I wasn't going to mention that, but that was my reason.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, that's interesting.
Of course, if Kid Gilchrist appears on the team next year, I'll just swallow all my pride and admit I was wrong. But hey,
yeah, I think it's gonna be tough. I think that the Hornets will continually look for somebody who's an upgrade at that position offensively, either that or you just.
Yeah, but so here's the other piece of it that I'm thinking of. Just looking at the team right now, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which you look at those five starting positions, which one do you look at and think this is the most pressing that I fix the spot and go down the line. And I think small forward ends up being in like the last one, essentially.
Right. Especially, you know, and again, we're going to have to see what this team looks like when Eric Gordon comes back. But especially if you have, you know, a wing player that could legitimately get you 25 points a night, all of a sudden it's not as important. For, I mean, Kobe Bryant is playing next to Ron Artest and trying, you know, I know Wade has LeBron now, but, you know, for the most part, you don't need two magnificent wing scorers. So I definitely think that there could be something there with the fit of Gordon and Ariza. I just, I don't know. I guess I don't want to believe it, but I could see it. I could see your bold prediction possibly coming true, but man, I mean, he's so young. I think Ariza has another 6 to 8 years, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I might be overstepping my bounds saying he retires a Hornet, because there's always the players who, you know, take that last year and go to another team. But I'm saying basically for the meaningful years of his career, he'll spend the rest of them as a Hornet.
So you're saying that if you have to invest in a Hornets jersey today,
Ariza.
You're going with Ariza.
Hey, look at that tie-in. That was good.
All right. My second bold prediction is, it's a crazy one that it would have sounded crazy a couple of weeks ago before the season started. It's also something that I've kind of been saying throughout the podcast. So this might be a little bit of a cop-out, but I just want to declare it definitively. Even though they are playing better and better as of late, my bold prediction number two is these Timberwolves will not make the playoffs, dang it. I don't care how talented Kevin Love is and that he is quickly becoming a top six or seven player in the NBA, or that Ricky Rubio is one of the most exciting rookies I've seen in the past couple of years. I don't care about any of that. I am going to live in the state of belief that there is absolutely no chance that a team this young that turns the ball over this much will make the playoffs in a tough Western Conference, and we will have two lottery picks in this draft.
Okay. I can. I don't. I still think that they're going to slip in at the very end of the like an 8 seed. I'm backing off the 7 seed. But I still say they'll have a better record than the Knicks.
Better record, maybe, but I think the Knicks make the playoffs and the Timberwolves don't. So
I don't know if they will. These Knicks are pretty bad.
And
Amari Stoudemire looks like his knees have just failed him.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're good. I don't have as much belief in them as I have a lack of belief in the Eastern Conference. I mean, if the Knicks don't make the playoffs, then you're telling me somebody like
the
Cleveland
Bucks
or Milwaukee or New Jersey will. So you're saying the Bucks make it over the Knicks.
Hmm.
All right.
No, Bogut just did go down, so maybe I'm being an idiot about that. But
yeah, I mean, if I had to bet on somebody, it would be New Jersey, either miraculously pulling off the Dwight Howard trade or Brooke Lopez coming back and you know, them playing a little better. I don't see, you know, Cleveland's been a nice story so far, but no way. Detroit's awful. Washington and Charlotte, no way. So, yeah, maybe I could see New Jersey if they could pull off a trade, but I still think the Knicks make it just due to the awfulness of the Eastern Conference.
So, since you had a little bit of a cop-out on your bold prediction,
oh.
Ray, let me take a little bit of a cop-out on mine. All right. The Hornets this year will post one of the best terrible defenses in the entire league, in the history of the league.
Okay, can you explain that a little?
And that is a direct tie into my post, which you should go read out there about how bad the Hornets are defensively, because they're actually doing exactly what they want to do out there. They are successfully controlling the types of shots other teams get. And up until tonight with Atlanta, where Atlanta drilled all their three-pointers, which happens every once in a while, it has paid off handsomely. They have controlled the number of shots at the rim, which is the most efficient shot in basketball. And they were fourth in the league at shots at the basket, which means that, you know, they had the fourth lowest percentage of opponents taking shots at the rim. And then the almost all of that percentage, the extra percentage went to 3 points. The people were taking lots of 3-pointers, but they were hitting them very poorly up until now. Mm-hmm. And even if you look at the numbers now, they're still a very good defensive team from 3-point range. So their defensive philosophy, which you can see, just take any defensive possession in the game and you can watch, they just collapse on any sort of penetration. Everybody digs. Ariza digs. Aminu jumps from the edge and tries to pull, you know, get his hands in there. Everybody tries to do that. And they say, you know, we'll let you take that 3-pointer and we'll rush out at you with our really long guys and hope you miss it. But of course, what's murdering them is almost it's their offense. Those turnovers, it's obscene when you actually look at the numbers. The steals, the points that the Hornets give for steals, you look at other teams and like the league average, and even on turnovers, most teams only average about a point and a half off of turnovers. Mm-hmm. And it's because, you know, some turnovers are the other teams drawing a charge, you're just throwing it out of bounds. The Hornets, because all of their turnovers are just mishandling, trying to get into the paint and forcing it and just losing the ball to the team, those generate fast break steals. The Hornets are giving up 2 points a shot on turnovers, which is ridiculous. And so, I mean, basically they turn a turnover and every single one of those, you're giving away 2 points. And the Hornets turn the ball over more often, I think, like they have like 3 more turnovers a game. You're giving up 6 points right there. And then, of course, when you do the reverse, because the other teams are not turning over steals typically, and, you know, the Hornets are only getting 1.3 points off the turnovers by the other opposing team. I mean, that's right there. There's just a huge difference. It's just that alone accounts for more than the point differential between the Hornets wins, I mean, their offensive and their defensive efficiencies.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you say that the Hornets basically scrap and claw on defense, and I agree. Is there any point in this season where that's going to – I mean, they're 4-16 now. If they're 7-35, 42 games in, do you still think they're going to have the passion day in and day out on the defensive end, or can these losses – really start getting ugly, because obviously they're not going to add anything.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Eric Gordon offensively, but really not be able to have a good offensive team and then that.
Well, I mean, only in certain respects. I mean, there's going to be a letdown. I mean, the Hornets they're not going to maintain the energy level they have. But there are certain players on this team who I don't think it's in their makeup to stop trying hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine Jason Smith not flying around like a crazy person on the floor?
No, Smith, Ion,
Vasquez, even though he's not terrific. Ariza is never going to give up.
See, I disagree with Ariza.
You think Ariza will give up? I don't see it. I think Ariza's
I even saw games last year where he was just standing around on both ends, and I definitely see Ariza get disinterested, I guess, more than you do. So I could see Ariza, Mech. I mean, I guess he's been through enough losing seasons that this is pretty much commonplace to him. But yeah, I don't even think
he just murdered Mech so bad.
Well, it's not his fault that he was on the Bobcats. I'm just saying that the guy made the playoffs once in his career, and more often than not, he's on a pretty bad team. But I don't think it has to be a huge difference. In the NBA, you know, a half a step on a rotation 5 to 10 times in a game could be the difference between giving up 90 points and 102.
Yep.
It's not like I'm saying they're going to completely lay down, but, you know, just even a small step back could be huge when really the only reason you're in games, which Dwight Howard essentially said after the game, you know, after the Hornets blow the Magic out, Dwight Howard all but says that the Hornets are an awful team, and the only reason that they're in any games is because they try hard night in and night out.
So I wonder, would he be willing to come to the Hornets and be with the team that tries hard?
No, because they're not in a big enough market for for his beautiful smile.
Right.
Yeah, so it'll just be interesting if that level comes down, but I completely agree with you. I also, and as long as Jarrett Jack's getting his shots, I think he's going to continue to compete too. I mean, I can see this team continuing to compete, but man, it's going to be an all-time team if they go something like, I don't know, 12-54, and they only have a plus-minus differential of like 3.5.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible.
Yep.
But all right, so my bold prediction number 3, and this is looking a little too far ahead.
This is the last one, so it's got to be fantastic.
Yeah, okay? And it's going to be something that I assure I change in the future.
Well, you're already making it not bold. Right, that's lame.
But I'm fine. It's going to be bold, and I'm going to be the pessimist come June when I stick to this. But my bold prediction is getting the number one pick and consequentially Anthony Davis is the only chance that the Hornets will have of really becoming a title contender in the future. The only guy. I watch everybody else. Guys are good. Kid Gilchrist is a fun player. Great, you know, teamwork, attitude. Perry Jones the III is fun to watch. Is really good ball handler for a big man. I could tell you all the positives of all the top prospects. The point is that in this NBA, you're going to need a top level guy. Eric Gordon's going to be probably on that second level if he could stay healthy and reach his peak. Anthony Davis is the only guy in this draft that has the potential to be the elite. And I don't think the Hornets are going to be in a position again where they're this bad to get a top pick next year. This is the only chance. The only real chance of becoming a title contender in the future would be getting the number one pick in Anthony Davis.
So you don't think that if the Hornets end up with, say, Andre Drummond, so the worst happens, which is my take on it, Hornets end up with Andre Drummond, and Andre Drummond takes a year to figure out what the hell's, you know, a basketball is used for. And so they suck again next year. Or do you think that they're going to be able to twist this team around that quickly that it'll be mediocre by next year, even if it picks somebody like Andre Drummond as their top pick?
I don't even think you have to be mediocre to not have a chance at a top three pick. I mean, really think about it. This year, a team with 20 wins is not going to get a top three pick. There's always going to be god awful teams in the NBA. And the only reason we're that team this year is because of, I mean, I truly contend that with Eric Gordon, this team is sitting with a record pretty similar to the Timberwolves and looking at the 8th pick and the 11th pick. You know, this is almost, you know, like the David Robinson type year that he had with the Spurs of your main guy is injured. The rest of your team is just bad enough to where now you could go out and get a top pick. You know, I think Eric Gordon is, like, to me, he's what I call a fiber player. And, you know, he could be a fiber guy for the Hornets, but the Hornets are going to need that number one guy, and Anthony Davis is the only one, you know, because they're not going to attract a Dwight Howard via free agency or trade or a guy like that. They're going to have to draft one, and Anthony Davis is the only one.
Well, okay, so here's where I get to drop the depressing news then, because I mean, if you go look at John Hollinger's playoff predictor, which takes everybody's current, you know, point spreads and strength of schedules and, you know, says, okay, this is what, you know, this is the most likely season. The Hornets, including the pick that he'll get from the Timberwolves, have a 6% chance of getting the first pick of the draft, winning the lottery.
What does Lloyd Christmas say?
I have no idea who the hell is Lloyd Christmas.
Oh, Dumb and Dumber. Jim Carrey. So you're saying there's a chance. Yeah. No, I understand, you know, the probabilities, and I know that pick is probably not coming from the Timberwolves unless Kevin Love goes down with the season ender today. But I mean, that's why it's a bold prediction, and it sucks. And again, come June, the Hornets will draft Jared Sullinger and, you know, Bradley Beal, and I'll be all over the podcast talking about how Sullinger could be, you know, a poor man's Kevin Love, and, you know, give us a double-double, and finally we have an inside threat, and Gordon looked great at the end of the year, and I'll be talking myself into it. But at the end of the day, you need game changers, and, you know, I'm watching all of these top prospects, and the only one, I mean, Andre Drummond is nice, but and it would even come to a point where if the Hornets got, like, say, the, you know, if the Timberwolves did fall and the Hornets had the third and the sixth picks, or even the second and the sixth, I would trade both picks in a second for the number one pick in Anthony Davis. I would trade both picks and Aminu. I would give up everything short of Eric Gordon to get Anthony Davis and just build around those two. But, yeah, those – that.
Wow, that's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, that's the that's the only guy that I could really see. I mean, he's absolutely amazing defensively, and I see the tools there for him to succeed on offense. But I really think that he winds up having a better career than Kevin Garnett.
Wow.
I do.
Wow.
No, it sucks to say.
Kevin Garnett's an MVP.
And it would have been blasphemy, whatever, 15 years ago to say that you think Kevin Garnett has a better career than Sean Kemp. And then it would have been blasphemy to, you know, eventually some of these guys are going to be all-timers. And I don't, you know, like I said, I like a lot of the other guys in the draft, so I don't just throw this stuff around loosely. But I would take, I think Anthony Davis has a better career than Blake Griffin. I think, you know, I really think he's that kind of prospect.
Wow.
So
big statement.
Yeah. So that's my thinking, that the Hornets already have their fiber guy. They need their, you know, they need their all-timer to be championship contender.
Cool. So why is he a fiber guy? Are the Hornets trying to avoid constipation or something?
Well, I mean,
I guess they are constipated on offense right now.
He would call him the fiber guy because, you know, fiber produces a good number two. And that's what Eric Gordon is. He'll give you a good number. He's a good number two guy on a championship contender, so he's a fiber guy.
That's so bad.
And, yeah, so Anthony Davis is going to be the one. He's got to be the one that you get. But again, I'll be up here talking up every prospect and whoever the Hornets land in June. I know that. I could admit that about myself right now. But in my heart of hearts, it's Anthony Davis or Buss.
Okay. So with that great news, you want to have anything else to say, or should we end it at that?
Oh, we got a nice little schedule this week.
Oh yeah, we got to talk about the future.
Right. Got the.
Let's rattle through that real quick here.
At Miami tonight or tomorrow night, whatever. I guess we'll release this podcast in the morning. So Monday night at Miami, home against Phoenix in what might be the only game that the Hornets are favored in the entire month of February. At San Antonio and at Detroit. So those are the four games, three on the road, home against Phoenix. I guess we'll do it the same as last week. Go 1-4 on most winnable to least winnable.
So the most winnable, I would say, is Detroit. Detroit is a terrible team. They're falling apart. Reason they don't try hard. They're one of. I mean, the Hornets have weak players at positions, but at least those players are, you know, belong in those positions in general. I mean. They just have players playing out of position so badly in Detroit. It's a complete mess. So Detroit's the most winnable game. The second most winnable game will have to be Phoenix, and then San Antonio, and then I'll go with the Heat as the least winnable now that Dwayne Wade is back.
Yeah, I guess I would just switch Phoenix and Detroit. I think I do think the Hornets get a little bit of extra energy playing at home. They've kept most of them close. Phoenix came in to New Orleans and embarrassed the Hornets earlier in the season. So I think they could win that Phoenix game. That Detroit game, I don't know who's going to win, but it's going to be god-awful. But for any of you who like to gamble, whatever the over-under in that game is, take the over. Because whenever anything seems obvious, it always trends the other way. The Hornets are 28th in the league in scoring. Detroit's 30th. That game's just going to be awful to watch. But somehow, some way, those teams are going to find a way to score against each other. So take the over. I'd say San Antonio's the third most winnable only because it took it took 2003 Tim Duncan to beat the Hornets this past week. And then the that Miami game could be tough now that all of their big three are back and healthy.
Yep. All right, so I guess that's the end of In the Know this week. Everybody go home, build a little shrine to Anthony Davis, pray, and maybe we'll get him, and suddenly we'll have an amazing team next year.
Don't forget to eat your fiber.
Have a good night. Let's have that ball time.